Happy Thursday, a Red Sox off day, but not an off day for the Fenway Rundown. I'm Chris Cotillo, Sean McAdam alongside shortly. It's mailbag time. We've done this before. We will do it plenty of times over the summer, getting your questions from Twitter. What's on your mind about the Red Sox? We're about to find out. Sean and I are going to try to answer as many questions as we can get to in a short amount of time here. I always enjoy these types of segments, and hopefully you do too. It's a mailbag week. I don't think we've done this since Sean's been aboard, but always good to hear from the listeners, the readers, the tweeters, however you want to call yourselves, and kind of get some questions that we, as supposed experts, should be able to answer. We'll start with a little bit of kind of general discussion on the Red Sox, though, because they are on the West Coast. We're both on the East Coast. Chris Smith been doing a fine job covering the first two series in San Diego and Anaheim for us at Mass Live. Sean and I spent the day yesterday in Portland, ran into GM Brian O'Halloran, talked to him up there. So on a newsy day for the Red Sox, as Corey Kluber moves from the bullpen to the rotation, this is something I think after the way he's pitched, Sean, the last few weeks, didn't really leave them with much of a choice. I think the one interesting thing here from my end is Tanner Houck's a guy who's pitched a lot out of relief in his career, had a lot of success there, was the closer for most of last year, probably an easier transition role-wise for him. But this is a team that, they need to win games. They want to win games. They're serious about this season. And it was a merit-based thing. And I think that kind of speaks a lot to where they see themselves right now.
Yeah, I think it's a good sign that they acted with some urgency here and not with too much deference to Kluber's status and resume. Not that we have anything against Corey Kluber, but for a guy who's, been a two-time Cy Young Award winner, and an elite starter in the past. He clearly is not that now and hasn't been for a number of years because of injuries and age. But I thought they might be reluctant to have him do that, that they would work around Kluber and maybe come up with some sort of phantom IL designation to give him some time to work on things, or to the extreme, say, this isn't working out. We've already paid $3 million or so of the 10 we owe him. We're going to bite the bullet and designate him. Instead, they sent him to the bullpen with the hope that he can figure some things out and contribute out there. And perhaps, as Brian O'Halloran told us yesterday, with the knowledge that at some point, while they now have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to starting pitching options, there'll be a time, presumably in July or August, when that isn't the case. Innings pile up, injuries take place, guys get worn down. And at some point, Kluber could be asked to step back in and contribute as a starter, which is, of course, how the Red Sox envisioned him when they signed him. I thought they were going to go with Houck because until the other night when he turned in a terrific start in Anaheim, unquestionably his best of the year, we saw the difficulties he had the second and especially third time through the order. So I thought, he's the natural guy, but I think Houck showing the other night in Anaheim on Monday probably saved his spot. He was actually better the second and third time through the order. So maybe he found something with his pitch mix. He didn't use the fastball as much the second and third time through the order. And he dominated the Angels in innings 3 through 6. So they feel he's turned a corner there and can contribute and be competitive as a starter, and moving Kluber out of the rotation, whether it was to designate him or put him in the bullpen, was absolutely the right call.
Yeah. And, I think an interesting point on that and moving him potentially back to the rotation if they need him later on, they have four guys now in the bullpen who are capable of starting, if you need them. Obviously Kluber and Pivetta just moved there, but Winkowski or Crawford, I don't think it's as simple as, let's say, someone gets hurt next week, Kluber or Pivetta moves right back. I think it could be maybe Crawford goes back to the rotation, whoever they think is going to give them the best chance. So they have options. When you look at it, they're really, nine deep in terms of starters. They probably don't want to move Winkowski out of that role. So let's say 8, but with Crawford and Pivetta and Kluber, and they're all in the major league roster. So I would guess.
I think they want to see a turnaround from Kluber. And that's going to take some time because he's obviously got some things to work out in terms of his control. This guy had an epic walk rate last year, and he has already walked, as you pointed out in your story today, nearly as many hitters this year in about his third of the innings that he pitched last
quarter of the innings.
Right. Yeah. So I think initially you're going to see him in real low leverage spots where, you know, a starter gets cuffed around and all of a sudden you got to go to the bullpen in the third inning. You're down 6-0, 5-1. Kluber's going to be the guy to eat up some innings and save the rest of the bullpen and hope that through that time he can figure some things out and be trusted again to pitch in more high leverage spots. But that's going to take some adjustments on his part first.
Yeah, the numbers that you were referencing last year in 164 innings for the Rays, 21 walks, that's 1.2 per nine. This year, 18 walks, so only three short of last year's total. In just 41 two-thirds inning, that's a 3.9 walk rate, which is pretty close to what he had 2 years ago in 2021, 3.7 with the Yankees in 80 innings. So the command has not been there, and that's what the Red Sox needed from him, and that's what they wanted when they signed him. Sean, before we get to the mailbag, just your thoughts on the offense that has gone completely cold on the West Coast this week.
Yeah, the pitching, other than Wednesday night, has been pretty good. We talked about Houck losing a tough one. Clearly, Kluber did not pitch well Sunday in that San Diego loss, and that led to some of those decisions that took place on Wednesday. But for the most part, the starters are giving them innings throughout the rotation, but now the bats are cold. And you see this over the course of a season where a team might be struggling pitching-wise while it's hitting the cover off the ball. Then the pitching comes around, and all of a sudden the offense goes cold. It's hard to juggle those things and have them all be on, going in the right direction at once. But this does not look like the team that was among the top three in runs scored and OPS and all the meaningful offensive categories. They have hit a lull, and it's come against a team that, frankly, is not a great pitching staff. Anaheim, though they're, 500 or so or a game or two above and not a bad team, they're hardly anybody that you quake in your boots about when you think about facing that rotation. There's really no clear ace there. And yet the Red Sox have had...
Ohtani.
True. I'm sorry. But
they didn't.
Beyond
they didn't
that, it's a rather average... And even Ohtani, although he pitched well in his last one, had kind of a rough patch himself, which is why I wasn't including him initially. But certainly he qualifies as a legitimate number one. But the rest of the rotation is just not where it's supposed to be. And yet the Red Sox produce very little. It just seems like, some of the guys have fallen out of their approach. They're expanding. And it's the kind of thing that snowballs when you have three or four guys struggling. You have other guys in the lineup try to make up for it. And what you get all of a sudden is everybody trying to be too aggressive, swinging at pitchers' pitches, and not producing the way they were for the first 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah, and we've seen that obviously over the last, few games, and especially since that first night in San Diego. I think it's 8 runs in 5 games at this point. That's obviously not going to get it done, even as well as the Red Sox rotation has been. So we're going to move on to the mailbag because that's the whole point of this episode. Thanks to everybody for the Twitter questions, to both myself and to Sean. We'll probably do this in various forms throughout the season because it's a great way to, get everybody involved and a great way to kind of hear what's on your mind and hopefully, provide some answers, some behind the scenes stuff that if we haven't covered on the site that we can cover in this format. So we'll start, and I'll actually give an answer to it before you chime in, Sean. Red Sox Sam on Twitter asked the question, why hasn't Dahlbeck been shipped out and what sort of offer would the Red Sox actually take for him? My two-part answer on that is, I asked someone about that over the offseason, and they said he's not necessarily burning a hole in our pocket. And I thought that was a good way to put it because this is a guy who, despite not performing at the major league level the last couple of years and despite seeming like he's a guy that could be better elsewhere, it doesn't hurt the Red Sox at all to keep him at AAA. They can just option him freely. We've seen, I think twice so far this year, he's fit the roster. They're facing a bunch of lefties earlier in the year. They called him up to replace, I think, Duvall when he went down. We saw him come up a couple weeks ago. There's no cost for the Red Sox to keep him. So, that note, that's probably why they do.
Yeah, he's not a drag on payroll. He's making very little money, so that's not an issue. He has options remaining, as you point out. And the other thing to think about, although he has been incredibly inconsistent offensively throughout his major league career, he does have two things going for him. One is the raw power, which occasionally he can get to, and we've seen him get hot for short stretches. And the other is his versatility. Nobody wants Bobby Dalbec becoming the starting shortstop for a week in the event that the fifth Red Sox shortstop goes down with injury anytime soon. But the very fact is that he can play literally all four infield positions, some admittedly better than others. And he's even played some outfield now in Worcester, which further enhances his attractiveness to the Red Sox. At the same time, you would think that there would be a team that would want to take a chance on him. You know, is he a guy that just needs a fresh start, new surroundings? He doesn't have a lot of service time, probably about 2+ years at this point. Not a lot of salary, and that power potential remains very tantalizing to a lot of teams. But my guess is they simply have not been overwhelmed or presented with anything that makes sense. And for now, they see him as a worthy or trustworthy depth piece that's worth keeping because of how little he costs them.
Yeah, and also I think there is an element to the Heim Bloom being afraid to sell low. You know, I think that we saw that with Jeffrey Springs, and he's admitted, I think, in the past that that's haunted him. So the fact that, he doesn't want to, give Dalbec away, especially, I think you reported at your previous employer that the Red Sox had gotten some interest in Dalbec from Tampa Bay. You imagine Heim Bloom giving him up, the Rays find something in his swing, and he's a 35 home run guy and, one of those platoon, faceless, nameless platoon guys that leads him to an AL East championship. I think that's something that Heim might be a little bit afraid of too.
Yeah, I think so. He's obviously careful in maintaining control over roster pieces that are not counting much in salary and can be kind of stashed at AAA in the event they need a body. I think they want to see further what he can do for an extended period at AAA, even if that doesn't always translate to the big leagues on a consistent basis.
This next one from Vinny DeMauro, and he asked about a couple specific players. I'll expand it because it's about the time of year we start discussing this type of thing. He asked if Duran or Verdugo are going to make the All-Star team. I'll expand that kind of more broadly for you. If you were to name who from the Red Sox is an All-Star as of right now, who would it be?
In my mind, Verdugo, Devers, potentially Yoshida. Maybe Jansen, even though he had the back-to-back blown saves, and he's got three blown saves now, and the ERA has ballooned up because of that. But I think people look at the achievement of the 400th career save, the fact that he got off to a great start, his sort of status as an elite closer in the game. That's a maybe. I would say that certainly Verdugo and Devers, and likely Yoshida at this point. I don't know that a guy like Winkowski, who has pitched well enough to garner some attention because he's relatively young, and those middle sort of high leverage setup guys don't always get the attention, particularly when they haven't established themselves over a number of years. So I'm going to say Devers and Verdugo with Yoshida a decent bet.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, and obviously these guys pretty much have all been slumping the last few weeks, but OPS wise, Devers only at 803, Yoshida 855, Verdugo down to 814. I mean, they're probably teetering more than they probably were before the West Coast trip.
Yeah, I still think Devers is among the lead leaders in homers and RBI, right.
And he's a star.
He's certainly an all-star level player. Verdugo, you could argue, has been their best overall player through the first 50 games for his defense, his hustle, his improved offensive game. And Yoshida has been a very good offensive performer, though admittedly a very average outfielder.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some tough calls, obviously, another month until
if you're in fifth or sixth place as the Red Sox, fourth or fifth place as the Red Sox currently are, that's going to hurt them a little bit when it comes to the profile and the standing and fan voting and player voting. There are a lot of teams in the division with a lot of big name players. They're going to take up spots on that roster before you start considering Red Sox players.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. It's one that's going to be, I think, a big topic of conversation now that the rotation is sorted out, the roster decisions. I think Pete Abe from the Globe talked about or wrote about this yesterday. Roster decisions are looming. Connor Rooney asks, which starting lineup moves are made when Adam Duvall returns? Adam Duvall told me last week he wants to come back June 9th, which is 2 weeks from tomorrow, when he's eligible to come off the 60. Does he platoon with Duran in center? Do they send Casas down? I'd say that I envision that, you know, them figuring it out on a daily basis with the three outfield spots and Duran just, you know, staying on the roster and simply taking the spot of Raimel Tapia, right? Like, does that not make some sense?
Yeah, I don't know about them giving up necessarily on Tapia. There are probably some other things that they could do roster wise, but I'm looking more about playing time moving forward. And it's funny that this question got asked because I was putting together my MLB notebook for the weekend, which will be available starting at 6 a.m. on Friday. If you're looking for some reading material to begin your Memorial Day weekend, and I tackled this issue. One scenario I can envision is that particularly against lefties, you have Duvall in center, and then you have either Duran or Ref Snyder in left. You have Yoshida as the DH, and you have Turner playing first base over Casas against lefties. Casas is hitting about .157 against lefties. He's not hitting anyone particularly well, but he's really struggling against lefties. So Turner to first, Yoshida from left to DH, Duvall back in center, and either Duran or Ref Snyder in left, depending on the matchup against lefties. Problem is, that's only about a third or 25% of the games. That's the number of times you're going to face a lefty. What do they do on an everyday basis when they're facing righties? That gets a little harder. I think they'll want to make sure that Duvall, you know, comes back and does one of those, you know, play one, sit one, play two, sit one, play three, sit one. They're going to want to ease him back in, make sure that wrist is okay, that they're not asking too much of him in the beginning. But eventually, it's going to be a very crowded outfield spot and no logical solutions other than the one that I proposed against lefties. How do they do it with righties?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a big question. Obviously, you know, guys get hurt. People, these things tend to figure themselves out. An outside the box thing for you, obviously they signed Duvall to be the center fielder. I think they thought he was capable of doing that defensively over 8 games. Obviously he was very hot at the plate, tough to tell, you know, in center, and Duran has done a really good job. Adam Duvall is a guy who came up as an infielder and has a lot of time at first base, you know, as recently as 2018 with Cincinnati and Atlanta. It makes you wonder if Tristan Casas keeps struggling, you know, do you put Duvall at first, maybe sacrifice defense there? We've seen it in the past. If they wanted, you know, they wanted Kyle Schwarber's bat in the lineup, they put him at first 2 years ago. Could they do that? You know, if we're talking about urgency, getting wins, I don't think that's something that you can really rule out quite yet.
Yeah. Hadn't even considered that, but that's a possibility.
He's a guy who, as Baseball Reference, comes to a crawl here. You know, first base, 21 games in 2014. Has played a handful there, you know, throughout his career. And obviously he came up as a corner infielder and now has been an outfielder really for the bulk of his career. But again, it's not like it's the hardest defensive position to play. It's a place where you can hide somebody. Again, if Kyle Schwarber can do it 2 years ago and, you know,
Scott Hattieburg can do it.
Yeah. And we saw some of the guys, Franchi Cordero, get a run at it last year. So Tristan Casas had the chance to grab the reins. He has not done that yet. And you know, if that's going to come down to those tough decisions, and look, there's more tough decisions coming. You know, if you have, you know, Trevor Story and maybe eventually Adalberto Mondesi and Yu Chang and Arroyo and all these guys coming in, there's going to be a lot of tough decisions to make, you know, especially concerning the infield.
The Mondesi delay is like this guy doesn't even exist. You know, yeah. There was talk about, oh, maybe late April or May. Then they put him on the 60, so he's not even eligible until we get into June. I'm stunned that given the shortage of options they have faced, where they had to go out and make a deal with Oakland to bring somebody in to play some shortstop in Reyes, who's, to give him credit, performed very well. But Mondesi has become this forgotten man, and I do wonder what's going on with that knee. He's now, you know, 13 months post-surgery and really has not started to do a lot of baseball activity. To the best of my knowledge, he's not playing an extended spring. GCL gets started in Fort Myers within the next week or so. I don't know if he's ready to play in any of those games, but it's clear he's not going to be ready to contribute at the major league level for, I would say, at minimum another month. And it's just strange how this whole thing's been handled.
Yeah, it has. I mean, it is. They have basically very vague updates whenever we ask about him. Oh, he's not, you know, he's doing the same thing, progressing, you know, taking BP and taking ground balls now for literally 3 months. And I guess it's a pain tolerance thing, and, you know, hard to fault a guy if he's in pain, but it's just, there seems to be more than what we've been told, you know, going on there. So not to be conspiracy theorists on this show, but, you know, it has been strange. Next one comes from Skull Fan 69. With Mata and Murphy and Walter all struggling, is there any chance we see Drohan later in the year? And I'd answer that with, they have so much starting depth, as we kind of outlined in the major leagues, with, you know, the five guys in the rotation now, Pivetta, Kluber, and then you have obviously Winkowski and Crawford. The chance to go get somebody at the trade deadline, which I think, you know, they might try to go get a number one, number two type if those are available. Obviously, they're not often. I think it's kind of an uphill battle to see, you know, one of those guys come up and make meaningful starts in the majors as the year goes on. Again, if he pitches really well in AAA and they think he's one of their best five, maybe they'll fit it in. But at this point, they just have so many arms. It's tough to see really an extended opportunity. And they don't ever like bringing those guys up to, you know, be relievers or to be, you know, up and down. They kind of want to focus on development. And this is a guy who's risen quickly, too. So maybe, but I would guess probably not.
Yeah, well, that said, I would not be surprised at a scenario where they have a doubleheader in July or August, where they're allowed to add a 27th player for the game, and they bring Drohan up to make that start, just as they did with Bayo at least once last year.
Yeah, and Winkowski before.
Yeah, as a way of kind of getting his feet wet, getting him to experience a big league atmosphere, but making it clear that it's a one and done and he goes back. I could certainly see that happening, but I'm with you. There are enough options on that staff that it would seem that there are other guys ahead of him in the pecking order. And if an addition to the rotation were needed, I think it's more likely it comes from one of those guys rather than promoting Drohan.
Yeah, I think the guy to watch there, Cutter Crawford, you know, he's a guy that was in the rotation to begin the year. I think that, considering how much Pivetta and Kluber both struggled, if there is another injury in the rotation, it would not be a surprise at all to see Crawford move back there. And I think that's something that, you know, obviously they're not hoping happens because they're comfortable with the five they have right now and everybody's healthy, but that's something to watch. Reggie 02893 asks us, what has happened to Jansen? 400th save, and then he fell off of a cliff. I think command control with the cutter has been a piece of it. Obviously a very wonky pitch clock situation against the Cardinals, but in your estimation, is this just something that happens to guys at points during the year?
Yeah, I don't think it's anything that should be concerning long-term. Some falling out of whack mechanically. The command has been off, certainly more walks than you would expect. Maybe some issue with that back, which has been somewhat chronic for him in terms of being able to fully extend himself in his delivery. They obviously have been trying to buy him time to work on things on the side. And, you know, there's one variable of this losing streak and the way they've gone of late is that there haven't been a lot of save situations. So he's had time to work on the side and iron some things out. I wouldn't think that's anything to concern themselves with long term. He was too good and too dominant for the first 5 or 6 weeks for this to be anything major.
Yeah, agreed there. AH Red Sox, Andrew H. coincidentally asked us, how do you see Adalberto Mondesi fitting in with this team? Rewind about 10 minutes and you'll have the non-update update on him. So those are the questions that were asked in response to my tweet. Obviously, you shot it out a couple times. We'll see what people had for you. One is in tongue in cheek from Pete Abraham about American status, which I think you already addressed, so we can cut that one out.
I did get him an empty seat next to him on his flight, so he thanked me for that.
Oh, good. Did you actually, or is it just a coincidence?
Well, it happened. I don't want to say how, but it did.
We're going to go off the beaten track because you joked that we're going to have to talk about my movie expertise, which I have none. From R. Massey 34, you have the entire movie theater to yourself on a crummy, rainy day. You can watch any movie you want. What's the movie and your preferred snack?
This is an excellent question, in part because you will have no answer for it as you are.
I have an answer.
You are the anti-cinephile. It's stunning how few movies you have watched in your 27 or so years.
That's a podcast idea.
It's really a sad commentary about your life and your whole unawareness of the art form of movies and filmmaking. I will provide three answers as a three-way tie for my favorite movie. One is A Hard Day's Night, the great Beatles movie from 1964. The other is Vertigo by Hitchcock, with Jimmy Stewart and Kim Novak from the late 1950s. And a third is The Godfather. Any of those three, Let It Rain, All Day Outside, I'm happy to be in that movie theater watching any of those three. And I'm going to be very, very basic with my choice of snacks. Lightly buttered popcorn. I'm not into any of the, M&Ms or chocolate candies or any of that. Give me popcorn. That's what you should eat at the movies.
I'll answer this. The highlight tape of the 2017 North Carolina basketball championship team at a Fiddlehead IPA.
Did Martin Scorsese direct that, or was it Francis Ford Coppola?
It was a Roy Williams production. I get a lot of shit for the movie thing, but when you spend your formative years breaking Atlantic League transactions, I mean, there's not much time for fun. So
yeah,
and look at us today. Yeah. So there's Sean's answers there. Jay Habib asks, can you ask John Henry? It starts with that. The answer is no, we can't. So we tried the email route.
We've been down this road.
Yeah. Any question that asks with it starts with, can you ask John Henry? The answer is no.
No.
The rest of it is how the Red Sox have the third highest ticket prices, but only the 15th highest payroll in Major League Baseball.
Yeah. Look, a worthy question this year. I would argue that to be devil's advocate here, this is somewhat of an aberration in terms of their spending. I think it's been pretty well documented from 2002 through last year that they were almost always top five, if not top three, and often number one or two. So they have traditionally spent. They certainly have scaled it back this year. I think it's pretty evident after they committed the cardinal sin of both going over the CBT and finishing last. They would like a reset this year. I think if they are legitimate playoff contenders around the trade deadline, they may ignore that and go for it and bring in money. But I think all things being equal, they went into this year trying to reset after going over last year. You have a right to be frustrated about the inconsistency that exists, as you point out, when you're charging among the highest prices in the game. The payroll should support that. This is the one year that that has not happened.
Another one, same question asker, Jay Habib here. Kike is middling offensively and defensively. When will a move be made to get a real shortstop? I mean, that's kind of simple, right? That it's Trevor Story when he comes back. Like, I think that's his spot when he comes back. And they'll figure out where Kike fits in. Is it a super utility backup? Is he the starting second baseman? Obviously, we talked about a crowded outfield picture. I mean, I think that's a simple answer where he's just keeping the seat warm on a very interim basis for Trevor Story when he's back.
Yeah, agreed. But I would take it a step further and ask, do they make that change when Yu Chang is healthy? Does Yu Chang, who people forget was essentially, becoming the everyday shortstop when he had the hamate bone fracture, he had played something like, 12 out of 14 games, started, really solidified the middle of the infield, chipped in with a couple of home runs. Kike's play at short has been better in May, certainly, than it was in April when it was almost disastrous. He made a couple of really nice plays recently that show you that he has the ability to make those sort of plays, but there have been some inconsistent throws. And let's face it, offensively, he again is not having a great year. So there, other than his veteran status, it's hard to make the case that with other options, he deserves to be an everyday player at short. how they chop that up and whether they have a job share at short with Chang in the mix as well. I don't know. But my take is you may not have to wait for Story to come back to see Hernandez lose playing time at short.
I just feel like offensively, Red Sox fans remember the 2021 playoffs. And yeah, he homered like every at bat. He was great. We get it. That's awesome. 272 regular season games over 3 years. He's hit .238 with a .709 OPS. I mean, this is a below average offensive player.
You know, in his defense, I would say August and September of 21 were also very good. You know, essentially when he moved in the leadoff spot and kind of became the instigator for the offense in that lineup, he had a very good second half after the All-Star break. So it wasn't just the postseason, but it has been basically 2.5 months of really outstanding offensive baseball since he's come here, and everything else has been underperforming.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, obviously a guy that can play anywhere, there's value in that, but, you know, there's going to be tough decisions to be made, and performance is going to play a role. The last one I will ask you from Anthony D, ADCRI1, I snuck in there. Do you see the Red Sox trading for a frontline starting pitcher at the deadline? I think, you know, with the expanded playoffs and balanced schedule and all that type of stuff, it's kind of tough to see exactly who's going to be buyers and who's going to be sellers at this point as we sit here right before Memorial Day, which is an important kind of mark in the season. Not sure exactly who's going to be available. I think that that is an area, and as we touched on last week's podcast, we talked about Luis Castillo. That is an area where, you know, they might feel like, let's go get a horse, let's go get an ace. But is one going to become available, I think, is the big question.
Well, I think it's less about maybe going and getting somebody with who's under control past this year. What about rentals, which is essentially what Lucas Giolito would represent from the White Sox? And you could see that team getting blown up, given how disappointing they've been through the first 2 months. And already there is a lot of speculation that the Tigers would move Eduardo Rodriguez, not because he's necessarily a free agent after this year, but the fact is he could be because he has an opt-out after the second year of his 5-year deal that he signed with the Tigers. So, you know, you could look at him as a rental. That probably depresses his value on the market because teams are going to say, yeah, we'll give you something for him, but how do we know he's not going to opt out? So we have to treat him as though, you know, he's got 3 months of 2 months of control left. Would the Red Sox be willing to entertain a reunion with Eduardo Rodriguez, not for the entirety of the remaining contract, but just for this year? Maybe.
And Bieber's another guy that, you know, is going to be interesting too for an underperforming, you know, Cleveland team. You just kind of look through who's been bad. You know, there are probably, you know, some options out there. And as the Red Sox head to Arizona this week, unfortunately for those of us who think Zach Gallen is the perfect fit for a Red Sox uniform, the Diamondbacks are 29-21 and probably won't be selling if they keep this up.
You would think not, you know, and we know that Mike Hazen is a big fan of Zach Gallen, as he should be, and sees him as a centerpiece going forward, would like to get him extended and have him be the guy that leads that rotation as they try to rebuild. He's certainly young enough and talented enough to be that guy to build around. So I'd be shocked if he were made available, particularly, as you note, given how well Arizona's played, to put themselves in the wild card mix.
I think that's all we got mailbag-wise on this Thursday, May 25th. Red Sox are in Arizona over the weekend, bookended by off days, which is always good for the guys who cover the team. Sean, I believe you have procured a big guest for Tuesday, if you want to tease that before we wrap up.
Yeah, we're going to be joined by Red Sox general manager Brian O'Halloran next Tuesday. We'll talk about any number of topics with Brian about the 23 Red Sox, a little bit about his career path, how working in baseball operations has changed over the last 20 or so years that he's been part of that. He is among the most seniority and tenure in that baseball op staff. So he's seen it all, and we'll talk to him next Tuesday.
That's the plan. Until then, it's been the FenWay Rundown.